This podcast is brought to you by NetBank. Whether you're thinking of franchising your business, buying into, or revamping your franchise, stay tuned for tips on how to grow your brand and portfolio.
Welcome to NetBank Franchise Podcasting. I am your host, Charles Schwinn. Today in the studio, we have Tony De Fonseca from OBC Chicken. Tony, I'm so sorry. It's a bit of a tongue twister for me, your surname.
It's De Fonseca, and you were pretty close. I've been called a lot worse in the last couple of years.
Let's talk about the name OBC. So there are two origins to it. One of them is OBC stands for Only the Best Chicken. The other one, the other one is where the company was started from originally. Can you give us your take on that?
Yeah, I've been trying to think of something more glamorous than Only the Best Chicken, but it kind of sticks to what we do, so we use that when we can. The real name really is just, it's actually amazing how brands are born. And it's not a very exciting story, but I guess if you see how the name evolved since then it is an interesting story. So the original founders, actually, as many Portuguese families did back then, they used to own cafes and fruit and veg stores, and they had a cafe in Urberosa Street in Carltonville. So that's what the name originally originated off. It was called Urberosa Cafe in Urberosa Street, Carltonville. So the early founders, when they used to go off to the markets to buy fruit and veggies and that, obviously to write Urberosa Cafe on the pallets was just too cumbersome and took too long. So they started writing OBC. So the original founders decided at some point, I'm talking sort of the 87s, that they decided, let's try and sell some chicken in our fruit and veg shop. And they bought something like 30 cases in the one day, and it sold out. The next day they bought 60 cases, and that sold out. And so it went on until eventually the fruit and veg went out the window, and they were selling chicken. And hence the name OBC Chicken was born. Wow. So yeah, that's how the brand was born. That's the sort of humble beginnings of the original founders of the business.
Well, I for one don't think it's a boring story at all. Tony, we were chatting a little bit that you were a original madman, as in you worked in advertising before you got into the chicken and meat business. Can you give us a quick summary how that happened?
Yeah, well, I'll try and explain the last 15 to 20 years of my life in a couple of minutes. Yeah, it is. Yes, I was. I joined a local ad agency called Frampton's many years ago, actually shortly after I finished doing my army stint, as we had to do back in those days. And in the army, I met a guy called Mike Frampton, and then we kind of hooked up afterwards. He was on the creative side, and I managed most of the client service side. He had started an agency with Sandy Papale. So anyway, I joined them, and at that time, I did client service, media, made teas and coffees, delivered stuff, made samis, did whatever it took to get the agency going. And at that time, we actually grew it to a nice-sized agency, and eventually we joined a global network called DDB South Africa.
They're still around?
They're still around, yeah. And at the time when I left, we managed to get it up to the top 13, if I'm not mistaken, in South African rankings. So it was pretty cool. And then ironically, OBC was a client of mine, and it was just came around to the time to go and do something different. And then I started my own consultancy, and OBC came as a client. And a couple of years later, I was asked by ABC to come and run their business, which was interesting, you know, from where I'd been in the advertising, I think, and in the marketing side, we had found ourselves really marketing some exciting stuff, and we got to work on good global brands like McDonald's and Henkel and J&J and that, and some fantastic local brands. But I remember years ago, we did the conversion of Anglo Alpha to Alpha Cement. So things like that were actually quite interesting, where we promoted commodities. And now, you know, chicken is chicken, as most people say. Now, try marketing cement. It's a great part in how you segment that. So there was a lot of lessons learned by very different industries. And apply that to the food environment. And how do you market, differentiate your brand from the others out there? So it was valuable lessons. So I came from a marketing background into OBC and not from a financial background. And I realized that times were tough and the business was battling back then. So rather than, although one, you know, you can't just contract a business at times, but you've got to aggressively market and change your position and grow the business. And, you know, you can only cut a business so deep before you realize you've got to grow your customer base and grow your turnover to get growth. So it was interesting. So my experience in the marketing advertising, I had the privilege of working on so many great international brands and local brands, certainly gave a huge advantage in marketing what is actually at the end of the day basic commodities. If we look at chicken and meat and maize meal and all the core essentials of food stuff, which is the primary products that we sell within the OBC group and the OBC chicken and meat group, So I think it was a great experience.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about you as a CEO now, because your role has changed drastically from 13 years ago, I'm sure. There are more and more stores opening up, and I believe that your target for 2020 is to open up to 80 stores. So can you take us through your daily routine? Like, what time do you get up? What time do you go to bed? Just paint us a picture.
Daily routine. I'm not sure there is a daily routine in this, not only in our industry, I think just in the world today. So the long and the short of it is if I'm not traveling, then I try and take my son to school. And yes, it is, morning traffic is crazy, so we normally leave home at about 6:15. But that's the time I get to connect with him a bit. My oldest son is now 21, so he doesn't need to be taken anywhere. He gets himself around. But my youngest son is 17, so to me, it's still an important time in the day where we chat and we stop and buy coffee together and then...
What do you guys chat about? I mean, what's on a 17-year-old's mind these days?
I'm actually amazed by the depth of youngsters nowadays.
Really?
I mean, if we look at the access to knowledge, and, you know, I often give my boys a hard time for not reading a book. And I guess that's me. If I'm reading something, I still prefer it on paper. So maybe I'm giving my age away. But, you know, so, you know, I'm always like ragging them about, like, you know, you guys have just got your head in the clouds and you know, and you're only reading YouTube. Or seeing YouTube and all sorts of stuff on social media they probably shouldn't be accessing. But the reality is not. It's actually a new way of doing things. And there's a depth of knowledge in my son, and I see in his peers as well, about world economics, about world politics. So we talk, obviously, what's currently happening in South Africa, we've spoken often about. But, you know, he's very privileged that he's in a private school, I guess, and I feel very humbled that we can do that. But the access of education that he's had about world wars and so we'll talk about anything, quite frankly, and that's quite nice. It also keeps you a bit sane in the traffic, where and some days we'll just chill and listen to music. So that's important time for me if I'm not traveling.
That's
in
cool.
terms of routine, it depends what the day brings, you know. We've sometimes woken up and having had to deal with a store being looted or having to be shut down because of sort of community service delivery protests or any other related protests. But really, it's that, fortunately, even though that's fortunately those type of urgencies are more the exception than the rule. Because unfortunately, most of what we see in the media nowadays is just the bad news. And,
of course.
You know, I'm certainly not repeating any political party slogans, but South Africa's actually, you know, despite all the bad news, we've still made some good things happen, you know, and I have the privilege of. I have the privilege of traveling a lot in township communities, and I see, yes, I do see a lot of things that could be done differently, but I see a lot of positive things. I see houses growing, I see infrastructure growing, and that's exciting for me. And I feel blessed to be able to do that, because you just realize that there is still good things happening in this country, and if we can just stop focusing on the negative, that there is a lot going on.
Absolutely.
So the routine then really is, you know, at the office, if I'm not traveling again, just dealing with the admin side, especially as we grow, there's a lot involved in the franchising side, especially with legislation in terms of consumer protection, making sure that all our contracts are in place and giving the right times for people to sign on documents and giving them cooling off periods. But daily routine, really, in this game, it really depends. We've dealt with like wonderful stories where a franchisee will send us inspiring pictures of him at the, and we'll support them at the local soccer club and the local school sponsoring stuff. And then we might get a call that we had an ATM blown up. So business in South Africa is unpredictable. So there's no fixed routine. That's what I love about this business. Even though we're in sort of basic food stuff, there's always a different challenge. And even in the franchising environment, it's always a different challenge. And as I continuously tell my team, thank goodness we've got some problems to deal with every day. Because if we didn't, we wouldn't have a job and we wouldn't be relevant to our franchisees. So that's the nature of the day. You know? So,
wow, I love it. I have never heard anybody describe their so-called daily routine, and the producers are nodding their head like this. So I'm just wow. So you're speaking about that you're a big fan of books and you preferred paper, and I'm the same. I mean, look at me, I've got paper in front of me. So when you have downtime, what do you like reading, and are there certain books that you're reading right now that you feel like every single business owner should be reading it?
Yeah, there is a couple of books that I'm reading. I like to read biographies of successful people, because, you know, I've always had the philosophy that I kind of love success, you know. I don't want to hang around with people that are always complaining about their circumstances, because it's going to get me down. I'm just going to slit my wrists. And I love hanging around. So, you know, I love to see people doing well. I don't begrudge them. And I think that's so important in franchising, because it's always been, when I took over OBC and I started analyzing, getting to understand the business, is that it was so important for us. And it took a couple of years to transform the thinking and a couple of years to get the financial things right. Because at that time, when I took over, there was kind of mandatory buying from a central source and that type of thing. And I quickly realized that as a business, if we don't make our primary focus on our franchisees growing, there's no hope in hell we're going to grow ourselves. And that's really been the fact. Of course, I'm in business to make money. Come on. I mean, everybody is. Let's call a spade a spade.
Yes.
But having said that, I'd rather make a couple of cents per kilo and sell tons of kilos than make lots of rands on a kilo and sell three, because it really doesn't, you're not going to make money.
It's sustainable.
I always tell people that you can't bank a margin, but you can bank a 5 cents, you know. And that's really the principle that we put into OBC at the time, where it took a bit of convincing the franchisees and even the shareholders at the time of, like, actually cutting prices down to move volume. At the end of the day, we're in a volume business. So the thinking behind OBC and the way I approach life is, I love to see people doing well. And if I can be a vehicle, and us as a business and as a franchisor be a vehicle to grow our franchisees, of course we're going to grow with them. And I'm very fortunate to say that we've got franchisees that have done exceptionally well, that have taken multiple stores. We've had our failures as well. I mean, you're not human if you don't have failures. We do make mistakes. But the reality is, so I love hanging around with people that are successful, because I want to hear their success stories. I don't begrudge them. I'm not jealous of them. If I can help them become more successful and wealthier, fantastic, as long as I learn from them. Because if I'm going to hang with people around people that aren't successful, then, you know, they're just going to, I'm just going to sort of get drawn into the negativity.
Were there any stories that you've read biography-wise in the last, let's say, the past month or so that really, really stood out?
Yeah, Jack Welch, I think, faced many difficulties. I enjoyed that read, although it's been a while ago. I must be honest, reading lately has been a bit finding time, and where I really get the time to read a book is sort of over quiet times over Christmas, when obviously the distribution centers are running, but from an admin side, we get to take time out. I'm reading a book now that I'm not sure I really enjoy it, and it's really about sort of self-reflection and how you do things.
What's it called?
It's got an F word in it, so I'm not sure if you're going to bleep that out.
are we allowed to say it? Studio producers, are we allowed to say the word? Can he say the name of the book?
So the book is called Yourself.
Never heard of it. Okay.
And it's really about managing your own perceptions and your own things. And at times, stuff happens to you.
How did you find that book?
Actually, exclusive books. I was wandering around and I saw the title and I went, this sounds pretty cool.
Okay.
And I've recommended it to a couple of people that always find, you know, the sort of half-glass empty people. Because at times, you know, if you say that stuff is going to happen to you, sorry, I'm also using a slightly different S word. If you continuously go around saying that stuff's going to happen to you, then yeah, that stuff's going to hit the fan, and that's what you're going to live like. So the book that's An If Yourself is really about change your mindset and make stuff happen for you.
Okay.
And that's really the thinking. And yes, like I say, is bad stuff still going to happen to you? Absolutely. But it's how you approach it. You know, you can decide it's a disaster. You can say, well, you know, I'm going to take a blow. But hell, you're never going to do this to me again.
Absolutely.
And that's really, it's really about attitude. And that's I think, is a survival factor in any business. And of course, in franchising, where you not only have to worry about your own business and your profitability, but of course, everybody's profitability that's related to you and their success. And that's important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I believe that, I don't know if it's recently that the OBC started a new distribution warehouse, or have you did a revamp? I believe it's quite something. I mean, compared to the old models, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we did. It's actually just under 2 years ago that we moved into a new facility.
How big is it?
It's I don't know. You know, it's about 16,000 squares, but I normally think of it.
How many rugby fields?
It's a couple. Yeah, you know, the way
being so it's two. It's two rugby fields.
No, it's more than that. You know, you can see I'm a retailer, or when I talk about our size in terms of how many pallets we can hold and not the size of it.
Okay.
So we can hold close to 20,000 pallets of stock. That's 20,000 tons of stock. So we've consolidated. We spent over 150 million rand building a centralized distribution center, which it's been completely built as a cold storage. But we are using one chamber still as a dry goods facility, so non-refrigerated products. So we centrally, we distribute everything centrally. And in busy times, it's been an absolute win for us because we can fill up our stores quickly with stock when they have busy periods. And it's very important in our environment that, you know, retail space is not the cheapest. You don't want to be paying retail rates in a shopping center to have stock lined up. So our sort of approach in the last couple of years is to try and make our stores a little bit smaller, make our freezers a touch smaller in terms of saving on energy and rental space, and then supplying them more regularly. So we did have two facilities, one dry goods, one cold storage, sort of fairly antiquated, but 2 years ago our shareholders have invested quite heavily in it. And now we've centralized everything, so we've got everything under one roof.
Okay.
And excuse me. And we distribute centrally now, which is fantastic because we can you know, our trucks can visit the store twice a week. Frankly, the bigger stores can visit them every day with a truck full of stock. And the great thing is that we can send mixed loads out, so the guys don't have to find various suppliers to get this and to get that. With one phone call or one online order, the truck will arrive tomorrow with a mixed load. You open your back door once, you offload the stock, you load your shelves, and off you go. So there's still a certain amount of processing going on in the stores, but we're trying to get as much packed centrally as we can to make it easier for our retailers. We really want the guys to focus on their floor and on their customers.
So how many stores are you sitting on right now?
So we're sitting on 53 stores at the moment.
53, okay.
Now, it's an interesting story, which I'll get into a little bit later, because when I took over, actually, OBC had 78 stores. So talk about trimming a tree to grow. You know, when I took over in the early days, I don't know if you want to get into that now, we can leave it a little bit later.
From 70 odd to 50 odd, were those 20 odd company owned, franchise owned, or
a lot of them were company owned? So when the business is like I said, the business started in 87, I took over early 2000s. So the business, that's why, you know, as I say, it's good to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when I took over and I hadn't done a proper due diligence in the business, I quickly realized that a lot of the sites that they'd re-signed were actually in the wrong place. They were off the market. Market changes, and it's important that one keeps abreast of that. So when I first took over the business, I quickly realized that kind of half of these sites were just in the wrong place, and they were...
Give us an idea. What do you mean by a wrong site? Like, paint us a picture.
So for example, let's use Kempton Park as an example. They just signed a new lease. And I went, okay, cool. Like, I looked at the turnover and said, why did you guys sign it? No, but we've been there for like 20 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or 15 years. All right, cool. Let's take a drive out there. I said, guys, but the market has changed. There's been a new shopping center down the road. The commuter ranks have moved down there. Why did you sign this lease? Oh, because we just did. I mean, you know, it's been there around. I said, but you're not making money off this branch, you know. So those were the tough calls to make at the time because...
be lots of tears.
There was.
Retrenchment.
And this is why the history of the business is an interesting one, because we had to cut down quite a lot. And it's heart-wrenching to tell someone that their business is not successful anymore and that they have to... they have to relocate and they have to close it, you know. So literally at that time, with OBC with 78 stores was doing about 75 million rand turnover per month. We trimmed it down to about 40 stores at the time, and then we were doing almost 200 million rand per month. So we had less stores, but a lot more stronger. And then we had to rebuild the business from that. And it's really made us what we are today, because that journey was a very tough one when you got to just cut back and you got to tell people that their business aren't successful and for their own good,
and you know
they need to
people.
Shut it down, and you know these people and you built a relationship. It's heart-wrenching to tell them your business is not successful. And I often tell my ops guys and recently when we opened the store, I called my guys and I said, stand here and see what you see. And the guys say, no, the store looks great, and you know, and the customers are in here and it's fantastic. And I said, but guys, look carefully, what do you see? But you know, the guy's like, this is a trick question. Is the boss going to beat us up because we don't know how to answer? The guys, and I kept asking, what do you see? And the guy said to me, no, the store's great. The meat is this. The basket is moving and the basket count is high. And I kept saying, yeah, but look carefully. And then I said to him, guys, you know what I see? He says, what? I see this franchisee on the till. I see his wife packing bags. And I see their two kids running around putting baskets in a pile.
That's good, right?
That's fantastic. And I said, do you guys realize what a responsibility we have? If this business succeeds, this family will succeed. If we fail these people, then that is on us. This is what I see. I see a family's life savings in this business. And that's quite important, because I've had many years ago, I had the I don't want to call it a pleasure, but of having to shut businesses down because they weren't doing well. And like I said, it's heart-wrenching. So to this day, you know, yes, of course we make mistakes. I mean, we do feasibilities. I like to drive out and see every site myself. I always say I want to taste the township dust, make sure we're in the right spot. Because feasibilities will tell you that a town is successful. But you've got to stand on the pavement and see how people are moving around and what's happening in that market to truly understand if people are going to come past your store and get across there.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Tony from OBC Chicken, a man on a mission, a man that is not scared to change, a man that cares about his customers, and a man that is hungry for growth. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by NetBank. Stay tuned for more on franchising or search NetBank Franchising for valuable information. See money differently. NetBank.